And I know that we have a lot of new people coming in, which is wonderful. And sometimes they know everything about Buddhism in our community, and sometimes they really don't know much at all. So I'll be explaining it at the level for everyone. And this book is called You Are Still Here. It's written by Kyogen Carlson. And he shared the abbot position at Dharma Rain Zen Center with his wife, Gyokuko. Gyokuko was Domyo's formal teacher. She also calls Kyogen her teacher. He did a lot of the talks there. And this is a collection of his talks pulled together and edited by Sally Tisdale. And she is also an excellent writer. And this book is really wonderful. I intend to read the whole thing. I think it was the fall of 2021 where we dove into deeply five or six of the chapters in here. And this one is the one on dissatisfaction. Did I say satisfaction before?
Yes.
Good. Because I am, it's confusing up here. All of a sudden you're up here and everything's confusing. Okay. The chapter divides itself easily into three sections. And so I'm just going to go through them and talk about the big messages I got out of them. And then there are some questions that I'll throw out that feel free to raise your hand or make a comment as I'm speaking, but also I'm not going to talk for long, so there'll be plenty of time for us to dive into those questions and discuss them as a group later. In this first section, he introduces us to the Four Noble Truths. And just so everybody is on the same page about the Four Noble Truths, they form a basis for the Buddha's teaching. I'll read the first few sentences of his chapter. Suffering exists. That's the first noble truth. The second one is suffering is caused by craving or grasping. The third one is there is an end to suffering. And the fourth one is the way to end suffering is the Noble Eightfold Path. And I can never remember all the eight things in the Noble Eightfold Path, so I will read them. They start with right, which means appropriate. And they are, oh, they're here. They are right view, right intention, right action, right speech, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And sometimes the last one is right concentration or right meditation. And then he goes on to say that the Four Noble Truths are related to the three marks. And these are just distinguishing characteristics. All dharmas have them. And when he talks about dharmas with a small d, that's everything in everybody, every rock, every tree, every sentient being. The first of the three marks is anicca, which means subject to change, transient. It's not fixed. The second one is anatta, which means not self. So this also describes a level of not fixed. I am not here in and of myself, all by myself. I am here because you are there and you are there. And by being there, you have created space for me to be here and so forth and so on. The real message behind not self is that Thich Nhat Hanh called it interbeing. We really are all one and we really are dependent on each other. And the third mark is dukkha, which is suffering. He calls it dissatisfaction, which is hence the name of the chapter. So everybody is characteristic, has these three things as their characteristics, among other things, but these three for sure. And I think, well, Kyogen says, everybody has these three characteristics, including himself, Kyogen, including me. And because of this impermanence of body, mind, and perception, it means we are inherently not perfect. Now, perfect to a lot of us means we're not the best. And maybe it does mean that in this context, but I also think it means complete. We are inherently not complete. And I know in my own life, and I don't want to speak for my teacher, but I believe I have heard in her story about herself, a point in time where it's like, is this all there is? What am I supposed to be doing here? Why am I here? This sense of, I don't know who I am, I don't know what I'm doing, but this is awful and this is really ugly and I can't handle it, is the way I felt. And that was back in my mid-20s, and I was just a mess. So I think people try to fill this hole. There's this sense that there's a hole there. And I think people try to fill this hole with things like the best car ever, the beautiful house, the perfect partner, the three gorgeous children, and on and on. And a sense of, when will I get what I want? He says that phrase in this book. And I remember saying that at my last talk, which was about not self, that was 6 months ago. I remember standing in the New Seasons. And for those of you not from Portland, that is a small grocery store chain that boasts organic food, local food, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result of the pandemic, more increasingly, their shelves are half full. And a lot of times the thing that I want, Nabisco Honey Grahams, the detergent that I want to buy, is not there. And I have stood in those aisles and said, when am I going to get what I want? Yesterday was eggs. I couldn't find my brand of eggs. And I thought the same thing again. When do I get what I want? And Kyogen says, there is no permanent refuge in dharmas. There is no permanent refuge. All dharmas, this is on page 29, if you happen to have the book, in the middle of the page, all dharmas are marked by unsatisfactoriness because, as another formula says, there is no permanent refuge in dharmas. Which is why we try and get all those things and we continue to remain dissatisfied. And everything is constantly changing. That's the big point for me about not self. Everything is constantly changing and we try to hold on. I want it to stay just like this. And everybody knows that feeling, I think. I have seen it in others, so I know that I must have it myself. But, you know, you are perfect. Just stay the way you are. And this moment is great. I wish it could always be like this. And that wishing and grasping is dukkha. It's stress. It's what causes suffering. So what else do we fill that hole with? We use and abuse, name the thing, drugs, alcohol, credit cards, other people. And we use and abuse ourselves because I allow people to live up here and tell me, you're never going to get this right. They'll tell me this is all your fault. You should not have done that. These people don't like you. They just want you to shut up. And as we were talking about last Sunday, that's Mara. I can never remember exactly what he is the Buddhist deity of, but I think destruction and obstacles has a lot to do with it. But he was the one who attempted to tempt the Buddha out of becoming awakened, putting all sorts of obstacles in his way. And I can always remember Chosen Bay's at Great Bow saying, Mara, is that you? Mara visits me a lot. So these are things that actually cause suffering or unsatisfactoriness. You can call it whatever you like. I call it, I don't like this. I just don't like this. And that's when I begin to suffer. What does it look like? Think about what it looks like in your life. Is it talking mean to yourself? Is it identifying problems and fixing them? Especially identifying problems for people and fixing them for those people because you want them to like you so much. Let me fix that for you. Is it traffic? Is it traffic causing you to be late? Is it the price of eggs? It's any of these things that manifest in our lives. So think about how it manifests in your life. And dealing with dukkha, with dissatisfaction, raises our stress level. And in some translations, some people call dukkha or suffering stress. I'm going to say something I can't prove, but 80% of the people in our country, I believe, walk around stressed out. And the other 20% are the carriers, in my opinion. Everybody has a carrier in their life. It could be me. So that's how he goes through the first section of this chapter, explaining what he means by suffering, the Four Noble Truths, how we are all characterized by this attribute, this negative attribute. Then he goes into the middle, and I will read a paragraph that sums up what he's talking about. This is on page 31 in the middle of the top of the page. I still experience both the perfect, complete, and the imperfect, lacking aspect of dharmas. Looked at this way, the formula that life is dukkha makes sense. Experience of dharmas is the experience of dukkha. The middle way is simply accepting this. There are two aspects of this acceptance. One is deep letting go, resting in the place where we know it doesn't matter. The other is picking up the present moment, embracing the dukkha-ridden dharmas, the imperfect experiences of our lives, whatever they may be, and engaging them completely. Our practices of deep acceptance and non-opposition to things as they are inform the way we engage life, including our own dissatisfaction. My favorite phrase, and he's got a whole chapter on that, non-opposition to things as they are. I love that. He goes on in the next paragraph to talk about Dogen and the fluidity of time. And this also showed up Tuesday evening in the Roshi Suzuki book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. There was a paragraph that talked about the fluidity of time and how sometimes we're trying to stay here in the present moment and the past comes rolling toward us. And suddenly we're living the past right here. I mean, that to me sounds like a definition of PTSD. At other times, we're right here in the present moment and here comes the future. And all of a sudden, I'm living in a dream of this wonderful event that's going to happen. Or I'm living in fear of this awful thing that I know I have to go through. There's another passage of Dogen's that I really like. It's one of my favorites. It comes from the Genjo Koan. And where is it? It's two lines in the beginning of the Genjo Koan. Conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. All things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self is realization. I love those two lines because to me it says, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do a thing. The present moment is going to happen, like it or not. All I have to do is not fight it. And that's what's so peaceful and relaxing about those two lines. I don't have to fight. I don't have to grab. It always puts a smile on my face, those two lines. It is not an invitation to be complacent. Because non-opposition to the present moment is hard. So that's where the work is. That's where our work is, or my work is in my practice. But it is an invitation to relax and stop fighting. That's the biggest thing. Get along with your life as it is. I often think of the movie analogy. I think of this a lot. When was the last time I went to a movie theater? Or when was the last time I sat on my couch in front of Netflix and saw a movie in which I was the star? Never. So why do I think I'm the star? Because I'm imperfect. But, you know, the movie is not about me being a hero, saving people, saving the world. It is not about me being a victim, you know, having bad things happen to me and this wonderful, heartfelt, sad story. It's just life. The present moment happens. And how I engage in that is informed by what Kyogen just said, the way I handle non-opposition to the present moment. And the way I look at the present moment is different from the way Katie looks at it. It's different from the way Dennis looks at it. So everybody has their own present moment, but it's not about any of us. It is simply life unfolding. So non-opposition to the present moment, that's his big message. Then in the end, he brings up Nagarjuna, who was a monk and scholar somewhere between 100 and 300 CE, and he had a great deal of influence on Mahayana Buddhism. And Nagarjuna says that the mind that can see this transient nature of life, this imperfection, this ebbing and flowing of all of us, is the mind that seeks the way. And the mind that seeks the way, looking into yourself, is where all of this starts. Now, that was kind of a new thing for me to think about, because I didn't come to Bright Ways Zen and start diving into myself. But you do sort of, as life goes on and it pushes you this way and that way, and the more you talk to your teacher or your friends, one tends to go that way sooner or later. I know in my own case, I couldn't really help it. Dogen also says in Fukan Zazengi, another favorite line of mine, learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. When we do all day Zazen Kai, or when we go to a session and we meditate for hours on end, to me, that's what it's about. I'm figuring out how to take that backward step and shine that light in here, or here, wherever you want to call it. And it's very difficult. I'm getting ready to wrap up. This is kind of the end. It's a very difficult thing to do. Kyogen calls it very hard, but don't turn away. I'll read the last paragraph that he says about it. So I've been sitting here explaining what he said in this chapter, and what it means to me. And for a minute, I'd like to get very personal about it. This is my own experience. If you saw my Way-Seeking Mind talk, which was a couple years ago, you know that I have been a member of a 12-step community for many years, longer than many of you have been alive. And those of us who hang around that community and spend a lot of time there learn how to do this. We learn how to take that backward step and turn the light onto ourselves, because especially in the beginning, it's a matter of life and death. And if you have somebody helping you of your choice, which is the way that thing works, they're going to push you. When are you going to do this? When are you going to do this? So you sit down and spend a lot of time. I think I took 3 months looking into myself as deeply as I could and writing down what I saw. And then I had to share it with another person. So the idea of turning the light and shining it inward, to me, is not difficult. However, if I am in the middle of my Buddhist practice, I do find that difficult, because nobody's beating me around the head and shoulders and saying, you said you'd be done next month, you haven't started, or anything like that. It is entirely up to me. It is entirely up to me if I share that with somebody. And there are all kinds of people to share it with. But I know from my own experience, you dig in there and you see some ugly stuff. And I think that's a lot of reason why people don't like to do this. They're afraid of what they might find. It's going to be uncomfortable. I really hate this. I didn't know. I had a therapist tell me once, Janet, she calls me, I'm Jana, I'm not Jenry. She said, Jana, is this the first time you've ever noticed anything despicable that you did? So despicable was another name I had to attach to myself. And so it's hard. And so I don't blame anybody for being hesitant. But here's what Kyogen says at the end. The mind that fully sees into the uncertain world of birth and death is the mind that seeks the way. As soon as we recognize how unsatisfactory this thing called self is, our search begins. What is it? Anyone who looks deeply at their own life and experience will find this question at the bottom of their investigation. We have so many ways of avoiding it, of distracting ourselves, including facile promises of easy salvation. If you haven't yet opened this question for yourself, please turn toward it, invite it, follow it, and develop it. Look deeply, for here the path really begins. And I know in my own case, it opened the door to a new way of life. It opened the door to an entirely new way of being with people. And it still does. Every time I look again, it changes the way I am in the world. I do fully believe that anyone who tries this will, in the end, find love and compassion. I am certain of it. That's all I have. So we have a lot of time left. Yeah, we got about 20 or 25 minutes. This thing says 11:50. So what do you think? Good. Do you want, yeah. Do we have?
Thank you for that. I just wanted to make a comment that this is one of those areas that hurts my brain a little bit, because it's an area that I understand. Sort of there's two different things going on. Seems like two different things. But it raises a kind of cognitive dissonance in my mind, in that, you know, we're supposed to accept the world as it is in each moment. But at the same time, we don't just accept bad things happening in the world. We're called upon to take action and do things. And at a surface level, that seems like there's a tension. And I have a hard time sort of articulating why there's not. I buy that there's not, but it's hard for me to sort of articulate it. So kind of in the same way that I've heard Domio say in the past that Zen isn't exactly a self-improvement enterprise. We're not here for self-improvement, but we kind of are too. I mean, like, we do become better people through it. And so it's just one of those things where I feel like there's two things kind of tugging in my mind in different directions. And, that's it.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I understand, I believe, a lot of what you're saying. And that's one of the things I struggled with prior to coming into a Buddhist practice, and now I'm more comfortable with. And that is that life is both. Life is beautiful. Life is ugly. Life is sublime. Life drives me crazy. It's both of those things at once. Excuse me. So there is tension there. And I think you have to, one has to get comfortable with the tension. And the present moment, here comes another one, and another one, and another one. And I might take a bodhisattva vow to save all beings. And in this moment, I'm the witness. And in the next moment, I'm the helper. So, I mean, that's the way I look at it. Did you have your hand up? You want to? Yes, please. You have to sit there.
It's very quick. I think rather than, as I understand it, the Buddha's teachings are not accepting the way the world is, but accepting your experience of it. Mm-hmm. So it's different. Like, well, yeah, that stuff's going on. He didn't say, oh, well, that's fine. You know, don't worry about that. But it's your experience, your reaction to what's going on, which is the most important thing. That's all. That's
Thank
the way
you.
I understand it.
I think that's great. Thank you very much for adding that.
Jinryu.
Yes.
Jinryu. Because of, I think, the room, the audio, could you briefly paraphrase what people are saying? Because a bit of it gets lost. for the cloud, and maybe I'm the only one that's catching that, but if you could just briefly, for people in the cloud that aren't hearing every word that people in the dirt are saying. Thank you.
I will do that. And thank you for asking me to do that, because I do know what you're talking about, because I was in the cloud Tuesday night and I had the same feeling. So the first comment was from Dave, and I'm paraphrasing. It had to do with struggling with the tension that there is in life between good and evil. Is that a good way to identify?
Accepting versus
fixing.
Accepting versus fixing,
yeah. Accepting versus fixing, and that tension. And I really appreciate that, because I sense that tension in life as well. And then Cliff came up here and said the Buddha's teaching about this was not necessarily accepting life as it was or as it is, but accepting how you respond to it. Cliff's comment reminded me of this little paragraph that I've already read. I'll try it again. This is on page 31. You know, it's just amazing how just a couple of words say so much. But he says, our practices of deep acceptance and non-opposition to things as they are. So it's not acceptance of things as they are, it's non-opposition to it. And that informs the way we engage life. And it can be dissatisfaction. It can be action. It can be joy. But it's our response to things as they are that we're talking about here. Great. Brian. Oh, there. It's hard to see the hand when you're sitting right here. Go ahead, Brian.
So it has seemed to me at times that you really can't change something unless you do fundamentally accept it. And I think of the notion of opposition as a distortion of something, and non-acceptance is a distortion. And is if there is something which should be changed, the first step is to really, I think, understand it. And that requires a kind of acceptance in a non-opposition. And then, as you were pointing out, through the passage of time, you can act so that it is, as it really is, different at a future period of time. And so as you were describing this alteration between witnessing and acting, witnessing and acting, I think that's a way that I've kind of made some sense of this. A desire I think most of us have not to lapse into a kind of apathetic, quiescent acceptance of things that that we don't want to be or shouldn't be in the world. So, and I'll just finish by saying that the notion that there was some period of time in your life when you were imperfect does come as a shock to those of us who've seen you in Sangha, where we think you actually are perfect, but we will take your word for that.
You have made my day. Thank you so much for that. But I continue to be imperfect. Oh, I am. When you do this digging into yourself, you're going to come up with some ugly. That's all there is to it. But your earlier comment, Brian, reminded me of something that I was going to kind of include in my talk, but it's a little bit apropos of what we're talking about and witnessing, and then my response to that. And to me, I always say it this way, there's always love and beauty in the world, even when there's horrible stuff going on. And I am reminded of the news story that when Ukrainian mothers were fleeing their country with their babies, they were met at the border to Poland with women leaving their baby carriages. So good and bad, evil and wonderful, it's all there.
In real.
Ruth Ann, go ahead, and then after that, Amelia. Right. Go ahead, Ruth Ann.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Thich Nhat Hanh likes the phrase of fight the no fight. And I guess I could apply that to anything in Buddhism. But when I want to refer to some author or songwriter, it's kind of on the tip of my tongue, and then I can't recall it like right now. But this songwriter who's written a lot of good music, spiritual music in the last couple of decades, uses the phrase gentle hurts. And that's how I'm feeling now with the tragedy in Monterey Bay, Monterey Park today, last night. And I thought, yes, I will be with people at lunch today for the Lunar First Year Gathering, my Tao friends. And I thought, I just need to physically be there as fully as I can, not with answers, but with a few years of association and friendship. So I'm glad for your talk today. It helps a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth Ann, for saying that. And thank you for mentioning that tragedy in Monterey Park. And what a wonderful opportunity you have to spend time with your Tao friends at this point in time. At any time, but especially at this point in time. So Amelia doesn't have her hand up anymore, but she put something really wonderful in the chat. Do you want to talk? Oh, there you are.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't meant to put my hand up. I just wanted to put that. That was the thought that came to me, is the saying that... I guess you'd say the motto of the San Francisco Zen Center Hospice that is emblazoned on their wall or something. But it's welcome everything, push away nothing. And to me, it's just the idea of being loving and present in the face of whatever is and whatever is on the outside. There's a balance with what's on the inside, and that's all I wanted to say. I'm just so quick to just push away, you know, the idea of anything of suffering or challenges or anything, and just the idea of opening up and being open to it is my work. That's it.
Thank you, Amelia. Thank you for sharing that. It brought to mind something for me, and it's the whole idea of grasping. I had to ask Domio because I was not clear. I said, is it really grasping that's causing dukkha? Because I always think of it as grasping and pushing away, and that's really two sides of the same coin. But you know, it's translated in many different ways, depending on who you're reading. Grasping, clinging, the three poisons, fear, anger, and ignorance, and on and on. Anybody else? Yes, Katie's going to step up here and say something.
I hope that you can hear me.
She said, talk loud.
Oh, talk really loud?
No. That's the way I talk.
I don't know. When I was listening to your talk, I was thinking about, I was one time in an organization that I belonged to, there was a change of leadership, and I really didn't like the new leader. I did not like the new leader at all. And I was sitting there listening to them talk, And I realized that I was actually wishing for time to speed up so I didn't have to hear them. And it was like, oh my goodness, that is kind of crazy, was the second thought that I had. And I, you know, and I just decided, okay, just relax. This isn't the end of the world or anything. But it was such a good example of that. In a way, it's not I don't know what I was trying to grasp there. I just was suffering. I guess I was just suffering, but I was causing it. I mean, to actually, you know, I was actually like sitting forward in my chair and kind of, it was like I was trying to speed time up. Anyway, it's crazy.
Thank you for sharing that. I've had a friend, I'm thinking of one from way back, who we were in a car trying to get to a particular theatrical performance and we were running late. And she was, just think about slowing time down. Just, you know, just think about it's just slowing down. It's funny. Yes.
I didn't want to speak again, but nobody else wants to speak.
You have to.
So there's a great teaching, I'm sure you all know it, of the Buddhas, and it's called the 12 nidanas, or the 12 links that lead to this suffering or stress or whatever it is. So I'm not going to go through it because it's quite long, because there are 12 of them. But it ends with, and that causes a heap of suffering. And it's really good to look into these 12 nidanas, because this grasping is what he explains in these 12 links.
How do you spell that?
Nidanas, Nidanas. Just
in,
these links.
In as in Nancy?
Yeah.
Nidanas.
Yeah.
I am vaguely familiar. Isn't it? I don't want to speak.
If you, I'm sure you've seen this wonderful Tibetan picture. It's called
Yes.
The Wheel of Life.
Yes.
Okay. So the outer wheel of that, is it the outer wheel? Yes, the outer wheel are the 12 links of suffering. And so, as I say, I'm not going to go through it, but you can find it in any book. Well, not any book, but...
A book on Adonis. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. You are still here. And the subtitle is Zen Teachings of Kyogen Carlson. Kyogen is Kyogen. And it's by Sally Tisdale, Tisdale. And they're all talks. So the chapters are relatively small. The appendix is awesome. I loved the appendix. Anyone? Well, there's no law that says we have to stay here until 15 after, but I don't want to cut us off if someone's thinking or is perhaps a little shy. Shall we end? We okay ending?
Yep.
The Dirt Zendo is okay ending. Is the cloud? Cloud is okay ending. We offer the merit of this Dharma discussion to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you.